thing I really want your generation to embrace is that the Earth is a closed system. We cannot leave the Earth. There's no place to go.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two, one.
Why do you say that? If it's in the paper, it must be right.
Because we are social beings, reared in a social way of life, all of us have to communicate with one another, to give expression to our feelings and thoughts. Obviously, get the other fellow to think, or feel, or do something. Listen.
Fire! Fire! Everybody out!
I love you, Joan.
You won't find a more attractive hat in town.
Fie, my lord, fie! A soldier and a feared?
And that's the news of the world today. Now for the local news.
Whatever its purpose, every communication is an activity in which people arrive at common understandings. Consider, for example, the way in which this policeman communicates. When he gives this signal, he gets this response from the driver. The driver responds to the idea of stopping, to his recollection of what might happen if he didn't stop, and to the policeman himself as a symbol of authority.
Ah, that hurts!
Whoa, dude, Cartman!
No, no, that's not how you uphold the law!
But he is not listening to my authority!
Oh!
Of course, the same ideas could be evoked by a mechanical signal. Or they could be evoked by a word. Language, written and spoken, is our principal tool of communication. Words, sentences, and statements form symbols which we can use to convey almost all meanings. But to use language effectively, we have to make other people understand what we are saying, as well as understand ourselves what they are saying. Every communication situation has these elements. The communicator, or person doing the talking. The content of his message. The medium or method of communication he is using. The audience to whom he is speaking. And the response the audience is making to his message. Each of these elements is important for effective communication. In any situation, we may ask, who is saying what to whom with what effect? In other words, who is talking? What is he saying? What medium is he using? To whom is he speaking? And what response is he getting? Knowing the answers to these questions helps us to act more effectively in any situation, either as the communicator or as the audience.
Like, I'm listening to what you're saying, but I only hear what I want to.
First, let's consider what happens when someone else is doing the talking. Other people are constantly bombarding us with communications. Who are these communicators, and what are their purposes in speaking to us? Knowing this helps us to respond more intelligently to what they are saying. For example,
come on, man, just watch me. Watch and listen.
Pictures worth a thousand words, I'll paint a thousand pictures. If a picture's worth a thousand words, I'll paint a thousand pictures. If a picture's worth a thousand words, I'll paint a thousand pictures. If a picture's worth a thousand words, I'll paint a thousand pictures.
If a picture's worth a thousand words, I'll paint a thousand pictures to symbolize the decibel levels, bread of a thousand whispers, to mummify useless unknown poems, spit a shower with gold glitter, pressure increase, unleash the catacomb splitters. And for some reason you wonder why your puzzle is a jigsaw, when you fail to decipher the Morse code to simply avoid the pitfalls. If need be I can get raw, just pocket the latex, but that's like asking why the man with no legs crawls to see the apex, or why the unplanted seeds won't blossom into a garden, parallel to your search for stardom where you leave breadcrumbs and jargon that you can't even feel. So how's that for surface tension? Every step shows you a worthless henchman itching to meet your maker. I'd rather finger paint than take a tainted pen and curse the paper. Voice box turns cauldron, saliva boils, then thoughts of vapor. See a foremost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Then a thoroughbred's accuracy isn't the focal point of perfection. Therefore, you trudge through waist-high sludge and caramelized paints where prints left taint every breath inhale. Hold in oxygen, then step graciously over landmine shallow beneath the soil surface. Take a small step for man and ascend the stairway to heaven on pegs, or take a giant leap for mankind to stand and keep your legs. What a dilemma to hold hands with. Sanity's a steep cliff of gift, and it seems because of your forked tongue dreams your hand slipped. Grip your canteen of get-rich schemes and set sail on the seven seas. Hook a left at envy to drown in greed before you swallow your pride and wash it down with a glass of formaldehyde. I'll preserve the day the earth fell to symbolize how Atlas died. I'll try to rush the wormhole to deliver a eulogy, but the other eight planets followed me to stage a silent mutiny. No more dodging shooting stars, no more lashing of asteroid no belts, more avoiding supernovas in fear of android wealth. If science and religion is the building block for a laughing stock, then the foundation should crumble at the epicenter of the aftershocks. The valve breaks at the vinyl spots, the crater will fall as crime rate drops. I've timed hate crops harvest to see if records of frisbees fly for
well, that would depend on the trajectory
and the way the projector projected me. I was a hologram waiting for wind to inherit merit discrepancy.
Is it time for liftoff?
I think Go-Go Gadget propellers are prepared.
Is it time for liftoff?
The rocket fuel was at peak in midweek.
I think it's time for liftoff.
The structural integrity seems to be holding, but three astronauts were found in a cockpit falling asleep. So will these thousand whispers ever hold a cleft note to sing? Or will these blisters become targets of the Scorpion King's sting? Because the poison invades the veins till the stage is immune. I'll take a rain check in the same breath of a checkmate. In three moves, I know everything is everything and nothing's still something else. So I cleared my shelves of any signs of wealth to impress the elves. My neck, it holds bricks that weighs down my lift off. As a precaution, I've replaced the wood in the loft with something soft. Your windows, they look clear, but my panes are stained glass to dampen the impression of expression any fame has. Do the hues you use, do they capture the pain my frame has? Or are you caught in the faces we weave, scared to change masks? I'm the lawnmower man on a mission to slaughter the strange grass, but first I must erase cyberspace and rape the track before a train pass. You strain cash while I take the root of evil, make tea, patiently holding hands with anxiousness.
I can already taste
that's the kettle whistle interrupting my vision of rainbow bands. The steam scalding my hand, the mug shattered and I wasted it. Now if a picture's worth a thousand words, I painted a thousand pictures on a beautiful backdrop of butterfly kisses. If a picture's worth a thousand words, I painted a thousand pictures. If a scream is worth a thousand dreams, I've dreamed a thousand whispers. If a picture's worth a thousand words, I painted a thousand pictures. If a scream is worth a thousand dreams, I've dreamed a thousand whispers. If a picture's worth a thousand words, I painted a thousand pictures. If a scream is worth a thousand dreams, I've dreamed a thousand whispers. I've screamed a thousand whispers.
Another question to ask when someone else is doing the talking is this. What do his words and statements mean to him? What is he really trying to say? Our friend the policeman communicates effectively because his signal means exactly the same thing both to himself and his audience. But the meanings of words and statements are seldom exact, and they seldom mean quite the same thing to different people.
You mean booby trap.
That's what I said, booby trap.
Everyone responds emotionally to words and statements. If we are aware of these feelings, we are better able to control our responses. Now, of course, when we are doing the talking and someone else is listening, our problem is how to make ourselves understood. That is, how to use language that will establish our meanings with our audience. The first question to consider is, who is this audience? What are its past experiences or predispositions? Obviously, we would never try to explain algebraic equations to this pair of youngsters. We know they haven't the maturity and experience to understand them. The same thing goes for all the people we talk to every day. All of them are different personalities, having somewhat different experiences behind them, giving them somewhat different predispositions. All of them take the words we use to mean something a little different. Knowing our audience even helps us in such an obvious matter as using words it understands.
But surely if politicians used words like holler, swallow back, check this out, all my peeps in your cribs, all your mofos out there, swallow this, booyakasha wagwan, then people would hear it and understand, didn't it?
Besides using the right language, we have also to use the right medium of communication to reach our audience. Most of us know already how important it is to choose the right situation. Every audience has to be approached at the proper time and place. And every audience has to be reached through the proper medium. And if we wish to reach audiences of millions, we have to use one of the media of mass communication, the press, radio, or television. But whatever media we use, and whatever audiences we reach, the questions to ask are the same. Who is talking? What is he saying? What medium of communication is he using? To whom is he speaking? What response is he getting? The answers to these questions are the guideposts to effective communication. They help us to that understanding of one another that is essential for successful living and working together.
I beg your pardon.
for the glory. We don't do it for the money. We don't do it for the fame. So all the critics who despise us, go ahead and criticize us. It's your tyranny that drives us, add the fire to a flame. And it goes in one ear and right out the other. People talking shit, but you know we'll never bother. It goes in one ear and right out the other. I'm only playing music, cause you know I'm fucking loving. It goes in one ear and right out the other. People talk shit, but you know we'll never bother. It goes in one ear and right out the other. People talking shit, yeah, you kiss the back of my hand.
I'd like to talk to you here about biocentrism, which is a new theory of everything which arrives at the same conclusions as non-duality. So every now and then a very simple but radical idea shakes the foundations of knowledge. So when the discovery of the Earth, that it wasn't flat, challenged the way people perceived themselves in their relationship with the surroundings. Our ancestors were challenged to believe that the Earth was round, even though the ground they walked on was flat. And nothing in everyday experience revealed anything about the truth of this idea. So if the Earth was really round, it was argued that people at the bottom would fall off. So it was considered complete nonsense 500 years ago. So likewise, biocentrism is turning the world upside down again, with the seemingly simple idea that the universe arises from life, not the other way around. So switching the perspective of the universe from physics to biology undoes everything we know about the universe and life in it. We think that life is just an accident of physics, but a long list of experiments suggests exactly the opposite. Amazingly, if you add life and consciousness to the equation, you can explain some of the biggest puzzles in science. For instance, it becomes clear why space and time, indeed the properties of matter themselves, depend on the observer. It also becomes clear why the laws of the universe itself are fine-tuned for the existence of life. So until we recognize the universe in our head, attempts to understand the world remain a road to nowhere. So science has failed to recognize those properties of life that make it critical for our existence. So the view of the world in which life and consciousness are bottom line to understanding the larger universe is called biocentrism. And it revolves around the way our consciousness relates to a physical process. It's a vast mystery that I've pursued my entire life with a lot of help along the way. So I've come to conclusions that would shock many of my colleagues and predecessors, placing biology above the other sciences, in particular physics and chemistry, in an attempt to understand a theory of everything that has eluded these other disciplines. We're taught since childhood that the universe is divided into two entities, ourselves and that which is outside of us. So this seems logical. Self is commonly defined by that we can control. So I can move my fingers, but I can't wiggle your toes. The dichotomy then is based largely on control and manipulation. So the basic biology, however, tells us that we don't control most of the trillions of cells in the body any more than we do control a rock or a tree. So consider everything around you right now, me up here at the podium, your hands, your body. Language and custom all say that that's outside us in the external world. But you can't see anything through the vault of bone surrounding your brain. Everything you see and experience right now, your body, the walls, the ceilings of this room, are an active process that's occurring in your mind. You are this process. You're not just the part that you control. So your eyes just aren't portals to the world. You think you just see out there, but again, you can't see through the cranium. So what you're seeing, again, is everything that you think right there is out there is actually a construction happening moment to moment in your mind. So again, I want to emphasize that this is all happening in your head, and even the light from the bulbs in this room, they're moving through a space that's actually created in your mind. So consider everyday reality. So for instance, the weather outside. You see a blue sky out there, but the cells in your brain could be changed so that that everything that's blue looks green or red. Could even do a little genetic engineering so that everything that's red makes a noise or vibrates or makes you want to have sex like some birds. Or for instance, you think it's bright out. The circuits in your brain could be changed so that it's dark. You think it's hot and humid, but to a tropical frog, it would look cold and dry. So this logic applies to virtually everything. Bottom line is, and the first principle of biocentrism is that reality involves your consciousness. It could not be there without your consciousness. Emerson once said, "We have learned that we do not see directly, but mediately, and that we have no means for correcting the colored and distorted lenses which we are, or of computing the amount of their errors. Perhaps these subjective lenses have a creative power. Perhaps there are no objects." So why is everyone surprised at the experimental findings of quantum theory? It's because we're still operating in a severely outdated paradigm. We still believe there's an external world that exists independent of the perceiving subject. So philosophers and physicists from Plato to Hawking have debated this. Niels Bohr, the great Nobel physicist, once said, "Not so. When we're measuring something, we're forcing an undetermined, undefined world to assume an experimental value. We're not measuring the world, we're creating it." And this is from a physicist. And at the legendary debates, Einstein presented ingenious ideas supporting the idea of a real world out there. But Bohr shot every one of them down one by one and gradually convinced his colleagues of his point of view. Today, however, most people still believe there's an external world out there. This issue, of course, is ancient and predates biocentrism, which of course explains why one view and not the other has to be correct. So let's consider a little of the physics, the real experiments. Consider the famous two-hole experiment. When scientists watch a particle go through two holes in the barrier, it acts like a little bullet and logically goes through one hole or the other. But if you don't watch it, it behaves like a wave and can go through both holes at the same time. So why should a particle out there change its behavior depending on whether you watch it or not? And of course, the answer is that reality is a process that involves your consciousness. And again, there have been many, many versions of that experiment. Consider Heisenberg's famous uncertainty principle. If there was really a world out there with particles just bouncing around, then we should certainly be able to measure all of their properties. But you can't. So for instance, a particle's exact location and its momentum can't be known at the same time. So why should it matter to matter or to particles what you decide to measure? Again, the answer is simple. The particles aren't just out there. Again, we can go on and on. One more, entangled particles you probably heard of. How can particles possibly instantaneously be connected at opposite sides of the galaxy out there in violation of the speed of light? Again, they're not just out there. Space and time are tools of our mind. They're forms of animal understanding. So this is the problem, in a nutshell, is that we look at the world like a chipmunk or a squirrel. The squirrel opens his eyes and sees the acorn, and it's just miraculously there. He grabs it and he scurries up the tree without any further thought. And we humans are the same. We wake up in the morning and the world is just magically there. We go through life, we drool, completely oblivious to what's going on around us in the world. But experiment after experiment shows that not a single particle out there exists with real properties until it's observed. So it doesn't take a genius to realize that that reality is a process, again, that involves consciousness. So what we need to do is replace the old physics with a new biology. Space and time aren't these hard, cold objects out there. Sort of like the pebbles and the shells you pick up along a seashore. No, wave your hand through the air. If you take everything away, what's left? Nothing. And the same thing is for time. You can't put it in a bottle like milk. So again, all of experience is just information that's occurring inside your mind, and space and time are the mind's tools for putting it all together. We even do it in dreams. With your eyes closed, you can be on the beach with bright lights just as real as we are here in this room. Your mind has the ability to create space and time just like it does in dreams. And in schizophrenics, anyone who may be a doctor realizes that those patients see people right beside them in reality just like this, just as real as you and I right now. But that's just part of the equation. Again, you know, you have to look at what's going on in science, not just with the experiments, but in terms of observation. So it turns out that biocentrism may be the only rational way to explain the structure of the universe itself. So the cosmos, it turns out, has a long list of traits that make it appear as if everything was exactly tailor-made just for us. And some are calling this the Goldilocks principles, after the old nursery tale of the three bears who try different bowls of porridge. Some of the bowls are too hot, some are too cold. And the bears also try different chairs and beds. And each time the third bear finds that everything is just right. So likewise, the cosmos has an incredibly unlikely list of traits that make it not to this, not to that, for life to exist. So for instance, the Big Bang, if it was one part in a millionth more powerful, it would have rushed out too fast for galaxies and worlds to be here. Again, the result, no us. If the strong nuclear force would decrease by 2%, atomic nuclei would not hold together. Plain vanilla hydrogen would be the only element in the universe. Again, if the gravitational constant were decreased just a slight, just a hair, stars, including the sun, wouldn't ignite. There are over 200 parameters so exact. These could be any number, anything, but they're exactly just right for life to exist. And so, again, if you tweak any of them, you never existed. So none of these are predicted by any theories, and they all seem exactly carefully to allow for life. And of course, you know, it's been hijacked by intelligent design folks, but it doesn't mitigate the problem of why these constants are all exactly one way when they could be millions of other parameters. So one way is, you know, is to say God did it, you know, and the only scientific explanation is something called the so-called anthropic principle, which says that you know, we must find these conditions because if we're alive, what else could we find? Well, of course, that really isn't an explanation. You know, that's unless you say there are an infinite number of universes, and we just happen to live in the one lucky one where all the parameters are exactly right. And again, you know, just one in a gazillion, certainly we can do better than that. So obviously, no universe that would allow for life could possibly exist from a biocentric point of view. The universe and all of its parameters simply reflect the spatial-temporal logic of the animal observer. So it turns out the long-sought-after theory of everything is really just merely missing one important component that was too close to us to have noticed. So some of the thrill that came with the announcement of the human genome had been mapped, or that we understand we're understanding the Big Bang, it rests in our desire for completeness and totality. So these comprehensive theories, all of them, fail right now to take into account one critical factor, and that is that we're creating them. That we're the biological creature that fashions the stories, that makes the observations, and it gives names to things. And therein lies the great expanse of our errors. And that is that science hasn't confronted the one thing that's most familiar and most mysterious, and that is, of course, consciousness. So for several centuries, a single mindset has dominated scientific thought. This model has had countless insights and applications that have transformed all of our lives. But it's now reached the end of its useful life. This old model proposes that the universe was, until recently, just a lifeless collection of particles just bouncing around each other. And they were following these predetermined rules that were mysterious in their origin. And the universe was presented like this watch that had somehow wound up and then now is unwinding and allowing for a little quantum uncertainty will unwind in a semi-predictable way. Of course, there are lots of problems with this paradigm, some that are obvious, others that are rarely mentioned, but just as fundamental. But the overarching problem involves life. In how life arose originally is still an unknown process, even though we can follow it and apprehend what's been going on since through Darwinian mechanisms. The bigger problem is that life contains consciousness, which is, to say the least, poorly understood. So consciousness isn't just a problem, though, for us biologists. It's a problem for physics. And there's nothing in physics that can explain, as you've already heard over and over, how a group of molecules in the brain creates consciousness. So the beauty of the sunset, the taste of a delicious meal, these are all mysteries to science, how we subjectively feel that. So how can something we can, you know, in neuroscience, we can pin down in the brain where parts of these occur? But what's really worse is that science can't explain how consciousness arrives from matter. So our understanding of this most basic phenomenon is virtually nil. Interestingly, most of the models of physics don't even recognize this as a problem. But let's put aside all the life and consciousness issues. The current model scientific paradigm leaves a lot to be desired when coming to try to explain the fundamentals of our universe. The universe, indeed, all the laws of nature themselves just suddenly popped out of nothing one day for no apparent reason. And we call this titanic event the Big Bang. And we don't even begin to understand the Big Bang, even though we keep tinkering with all the different parameters in expansion, for instance. But again, the Big Bang, we all know, is really not an explanation at all. At some point, virtually everyone has thought, this doesn't really work. This doesn't really explain anything fundamentally, not really. So when it comes right down to it, science is amazingly good at figuring out how the parts work. But what eludes us is the big picture. We create these exquisite technologies from our ever-expanding knowledge of the physical processes. We do badly in just one area, which unfortunately encompasses all bottom-line issues. And that is, what is the nature of this thing we call reality, this universe as a whole? In any honest summary of the current state of explaining the universe as a whole, it's a swamp. And this Everglade is one where alligators of common sense have to be evaded at every turn. So some scientists insist that the theory of everything is just around the corner and that we'll eventually know everything, and any day now. And this isn't going to happen, and it hasn't happened for a reason. And that is because we've shunted a very critical component out of our view, and that component, of course, is consciousness. And it's not just a small item. It's not like anything else. Indeed, it's nothing like anything else. Consciousness is awareness, it's perception, and in an utter mystery, we think it somehow just arises from goo. So how did inert, random bits of carbon ever morph into that Chinese guy who always wins the hot dog eating contest? So in short, the attempt to explain the universe, its origins, its parameters, and what's really going on requires us to understand how the observer, us, how our presence plays a role. So at first this may seem impossible, since much of consciousness still is mysterious. But as we shall see, we can use what we know and what we are increasingly learning to formulate models of the universe that make more sense for the first time. So undeniably, it's the biological creature that makes the observations, that creates the theories. And our entire education system, indeed the construction of language itself, revolves around that bottom line mindset that assumes there's a separate universe out there, which each of us individually arrives at on a very temporary basis. It's further assumed that we accurately perceive this external pre-existing reality, and we play little or no role in its appearance. However, starting in the 1920s, the results of experiments have started to show just the opposite. So the observer, it turns out, critically influences the outcome. An electron, again, as I mentioned earlier, can be both a particle and a wave. But how, and more importantly, where that particle will be located, depends on the actual act of observation itself. And again, this is most famously illustrated in the two-hole experiment, which has been performed so many times in so many variations that has conclusively been proven that if you watch a subatomic particle or a bit of light pass through two slits in a barrier, it will behave like a particle. And it creates these solid-looking hits on a barrier that the physicists can measure. And so like a bullet, it goes through one hole. But again, if you don't observe its trajectory, the particle then exhibits the behavior of a wave and can go through more than one hole at the same time. And since then, the list of paradoxes and intractable problems has continued to grow, starting with those accompanying the Big Bang. For instance, how could the entire universe just arise out of nothingness?
If I answer your riddles, can I enter your forest?
Where you live, wonder why you haven't before. should be falling. Listen to reason. The season is coming. Stand in the place where you live.
Now face the world.
Think about direction. Wonder why you have it.
Now
stand in the place where you would be falling. Listen to reason. Reason is calling. Your feet are going to be on the ground. Your head is there to move you around. So stand. Now face no. Think about direction. Wonder why you have it.
Now stand.
Now face no. Think about the place where you
because the smartest scientists in the entire world all agree that it's real.
I'm glad you brought that up. Mr. Reynolds, these were all the smartest scientists. Only problem is, they kept being wrong!
This is insane, you fool!
I'm a fool because I have more faith in the saints that wrote the Bible?
Yeah, because you just read the words of a bunch of guys that you never met, and you just take it on faith that everything they wrote was true.
And what makes you think what your scientists are writing is any more truer than my saints?
Because there are volumes of proven data. Numbers. You know, figures.
Have you pored through the data yourself? The numbers? The figures?
Well, no. No.
Oh. Interesting. So let me get this straight, Mr. Reynolds. You get your information from a book written by men you've never met. And you take their words as truth based on a willingness to believe, a desire to accept. A leap of, dare I say it, faith?
Come on. Look, I mean, I don't even know how I'm supposed to respond to that. Like, come on.
I rest my case.
Matter tells space how to curve. Did I get that right?
The science community is ignoring a lot of the things that we're looking at. And so normal people are going out and doing experiments. And one of the experiments has turned up an amazing fact that we've not been told, and it destroys the whole idea of this heliocentric system. And that is the moon. Now, you can actually measure the temperature of the moonlight next to the temperature of the shade of the moonlight, and you'll find the moonlight is colder than the shade, the opposite from the sun. So the moon is throwing out its own light, and that light is the opposite from the sun. Now, that tells you that it's not reflecting the sun's light.
Uh-huh.
It's producing its own, and its light is different from the sun's. So, you know, the scientific community have not told us this, yeah? Because they won't tell us this, because it destroys this idea that the sun is, you know, is lighting up the moon.
Everyone knows, like, if you're in sunlight, it's colder in the shade, right? So if it's 100 degrees
right.
In the sun, it's 90 degrees in shade. You go to the moonlight, like, especially in a full moon, especially if it's high in the sky, the moon is its own independent object. It is not reflecting the sun rays. The sun is its own object. Also, you know, the about the same size, which is, you know, again, coincidentally, you know, why the moon fits so perfectly in front of the sun during an eclipse. We always thought it was coincidence that even though it was 400 times farther away, that it was also exactly 400 times less diameter, which is why it fits. And the other weird thing about the moon, which everyone thinks, oh, it's just a coincidence, is that we never see the other side of it. It's constantly perfectly rotating, so we only see one side of the moon. Exactly one side. It's not like we have like a quarter of a degree every 5 years or half a degree here and there. It's always the same side. There are no coincidences when it comes to this system. It was deliberately built, but I think it was deliberately built to be detected. And I think we were naturally supposed to figure this thing out maybe as late as the 1970s, but the government figured it out first, and they have been spending a heck of a lot of money trying to keep it a secret.
The other question is, well, how come ships don't go off the sea if it's flat? How come the ships don't fall off the edge? Well, here's why they don't fall off the edge. There's a 200 to 300 foot high wall that is the border, the scripture says, is keeping everything in. Nothing's going past that.
Because I don't want you finding out what's beyond.
It's a 20,000 foot sheer wall of ice, but that's never stopped me before. Risk? Of course I'm aware of the risks. Thank you for your concern.
Physics. Why objects move on a ball spinning 1,000 miles an hour while it's going 26,000 miles around the sun. Basically the model we're accepting right now.
The sailor thinks that he's traveling around the Earth this way, when in effect he's traveling around the Earth this way.
They began flying it around the world from Abu Dhabi last year with stops in India and China, then across the vast Pacific.
Does running around your neighborhood prove that the neighborhood is round?
I was an airline pilot for Delta for 26 years. A pilot's primary flight instrument is his artificial horizon, which he has to be maintained level to keep from climbing and descending. From a cockpit, weather permitting, I could see hundreds of miles in all directions, viewing cities connected by roads across the flat plain as far as the eye could see.
If a pilot is flying around the curve of the Earth, then he should be dipping the nose down, and every 5 minutes he should be dipping the nose down to stay around the curve. Mm-hmm. That's absolute proof that a plane flies over a flat surface rather than a curved one.
Now, how come in all these ball pictures, man, you can see all the continents pretty much, and there's just a little bit of clouds here and there. Man, it's like some of these pictures, like there's some where they show the Earth at night and you can see all the lights and stuff. It's like, you're telling me the entire continent doesn't have clouds? The entire female continent, like you can see Africa and all these lights and all this stuff. Like, you know, if you turn on your porch light, I guess you can see it from space, apparently. And it's like there's no clouds in some of these pictures.
And they spelled out the word sex, right, recently, probably a few months ago, in one of the clouds.
But, you know, if they do their research, they say, well, those are composites. And I said, well, how come they copy and paste the clouds on some of these? And they use the same cloud form. Like, if you're going to make a composite, but you shouldn't be copying and pasting clouds. That means you're adding stuff that's not real.
Yeah, and the thing is, those pictures that you're talking about, the blue marble pictures, you know, I think it's about maybe 8 to 10 of them over time that NASA has put out. And you're absolutely right. None of those pictures look the same. The color of the water is different. Like you said, the continents are different sizes. It's just unbelievable. And I think what happened originally was they would put these things out and nobody was paying any attention to it. You know, and then all of a sudden now people are paying attention to it, and now they're pulling these pictures in, and it's an obvious fraud.
What?
And the thing is, there's supposedly tens of thousands of satellites orbiting Earth. We can't get any close-ups of Earth. We can't get a view of Australia with the buildings upside down.
and they'll look at you like you're crazy. But really, you are the sane one for asking real questions. I was taught school book bullshit in public school, and somehow I was able to break free and free my mind. You know how I did it? I watched NASA rockets explode a bunch of times. Fly off sideways and not go to space.
If you watch the trajectory of the space shuttle, it doesn't go straight up. It always goes in a curve and out to sea. The point is, they actually go horizontal. The space shuttle goes horizontal. It never goes any further up. It goes horizontal, very, very low down in the atmosphere. You know, it's still in the atmosphere while it's horizontal, so it never gets any higher. And it goes out of sight, not because it goes too high, because it goes too far downrange. And they have a plane that's mocked up to look like a space shuttle, it's a jet-powered aircraft. That's it. It's not a glider. It's an aircraft. And that's what they're fooling us, taking billions of dollars in and giving us images and fake planes for that 10 billion, you know, however many billions of dollars it is. What goes up must come down. And literally, we have not ever seen anything that has ever gone up and not come down.
Kicks and deals. It's a long fly ball going back, back. And the ball shatters the sky, bringing the ocean itself down into the stadium. Oh, Simpson just broke this dream's reality wide open.
People figured out that we were an enclosed system. The more advanced we got, it would be the biggest thought on our minds. That's all we care about. If you could make a wildlife preserve 1,000 miles square, all people, you know, all human beings would do is just be knocking on the fence constantly, going, "What? Why is this fence here? Who built the fence? Why are we in here?" And so on and so on.
Why do you think that Truman has never come close to discovering the true nature of his world until now?
We accept the reality of the world with which we're presented.
Earth.
You start here, and you go around long enough in the same direction, you wind up in the place you started from. Yes, Thomas.
Why don't we fall off when we walk underneath, Miss Sarah?
Because of a force called gravity.
What does gravity look like?
Gravity is something we can't see. But we know it's a great invisible force that keeps us all here on Earth. It's a natural force that keeps us all from flying off into space.
We were always told that the world is flat.
You were told right. Don't listen to her. I've been patient with you, Sarah. Lord knows I've been patient. But now your words have revealed you.
The law of gravity was discovered by Sir Isaac Newton in 1687. That's almost 200 years ago, Uncle Evan.
What is gravity?
You have no idea. Okay, next question.
Wow.
No, here's the difference. We can describe gravity. Okay. We can say what it does to other things. We can measure it, predict with it. But when you start asking, like, what it is, I don't know. Einstein, in an Einsteinian answer, we would say gravity is the curvature of space and time. And that, and objects will follow the curvature of space-time, and we interpret that as a force of gravity. That's probably the best answer I can give to a what is gravity question, or why is there gravity. That's the best I can do there. I think that's a good start.
Here's the picture of the Earth from space. There it is. Since you were a kid, you've seen this image. But you've never seen it from that point of view. You've never seen that with your eyes from that scale of a model, that point of view, from outside of the planet's surface.
What's the point of this grand deception? I think Eric Dubay explains it best.
People are always asking, you know, why do they do this? I mean, this is, I mean, other than the obvious profit margin motive, NASA being the biggest black budget black hole in existence, sucking in over $30 billion taxpayer money for the fake moon landings alone. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, hundreds of billions of dollars, and not just NASA, but RASA and all the other fake space organizations around the world, giving CGI images for hundreds of billions of dollars.
You want to put something in context. If you want to do something with $3.5 trillion, you can do whatever you want.
Now, let's see. How do we go about proving that? Go to the seashore. Go to a seashore. Watch a ship sail away. They don't disappear all at once. Now, first, the bottom will disappear. See, the bottom of the ship is gone. Now we can see midway up, and then the whole thing disappears. Now, ships came back. They didn't fall off the table. So people realized that the world is curved. I mean, it's a big curve, but it's curved. So the process of testing claims, the world is flat, the world is round, is what we call science. Now, if you have a claim that can't be tested, that's what we call pseudoscience. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof.
Boats don't disappear over the curvature of the horizon. Boats disappear due to perspective. All you have to do is go to the beach, watch a boat disappear from your eye, and then whip out your telescope, your binoculars, or your high-powered zoom on your camera, and you can pull the entire boat right back into view. Whole mass and all. Yeah, that's right. You think the boat disappeared? Just whip out your telescope, your binoculars, or your zoom camera. You bring the entire boat back into view, completely debunking everything Coy just told you.
We went to the North Pole in the 1900s. This is 1482. Nobody went to the top of the globe, to the bottom, or flew up, or built a skyscraper. It's funny that we said that this is what we're in right now. This is what we're on for any instrument approved. This is the first time we actually had like an instrument of flight actually go high enough to actually check out if what we agreed to 500 years ago was real. So if they were wrong after 500 years, the question is, what'd they tell you?
I do want to talk about something. I don't want to make anybody angry, but there's something that's been weighing on me. I feel like needs to be said. Let's be done with Star Wars. No more Star Wars. Stop everything. Stop it. It's done. The first batch was good, I guess. It was fun. Then it kept going and like, what happened before? What happened after? What happened in the middle if it was a cartoon? What happened if it was Monopoly? And it never, like, Star Wars fans are getting to be like the people who, like, when their dog dies, they stuff it and keep it in the living room and make it keep looking at it. Like, look at this dog, we're still best buddies. I put in new eyeballs. 25 years ago, these eyeballs would have been impossible, but I put, keep looking at my dog. I think in 50 years, George Lucas is just going to be like his brain inside of a robot that comes up with new Star Wars movies. It'll be like, Chewbacca goes to college. Darth Vader loses his wallet. Chewbacca goes to college. We just made that one. Make it again! Did you hear they're remaking Chewbacca Goes to College?
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
How fickle my heart and how woozy my eyes.
I struggle to find any truth in your lies. And now my heart stumbles on things I don't know. My weakness I feel I must finally show. Lend me your hand and we'll conquer them all. But lend me your heart and I'll just let you fall. Lend me your eyes, I can change what you see. But your soul you must keep totally free. Ha, 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 ha. Any truth in your lies. And now my heart stumbles on things I don't know. My weakness I feel I must finally show. Ha, 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 ha. In these bodies we will live, in these bodies we will die. Where you invest your love, you invest your life. In these bodies we will live, in these bodies we will die. And where you invest your love, you invest your life.
Now, go find the others.com.
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever.